Abraham's life, neatly folded into three parashios, anticlimax of Chayesara, in stark contrast to the drama of Lech Lecha and Vayera, departure and revelation. We've been trying to glean major themes of human behavior, human development, religious consciousness, work-life balance. Spoke about that last week with Avram Avinu. And now we have Avram. Now we have Avram ceding the stage to Yitzchak, the second of these three major figures in Sefer Bereishis. This is a major transition, major moment in Sefer Bereishis, juncture. And yet, the first thing we sense is asymmetry, because Avram and his saga unfolds over three parshios, and Yaakov's narrative occupies about six, Vayetze, Vayishlach, Vayeshev, Miketz, Vayigash, and Vayichi. It makes sense, he's got 12 children, so it takes a while for them to get born, settle things out, decide where they want to live, solve world hunger, so it takes a while. Now Yitzchak has one parsha. One single, solitary parsha. And even that parsha doesn't seem to be symmetrical because it doesn't carry any drama about his name and his career and his departure and his toldos. He had children. Or he was a child, as we'll see. Not clear. So before we budge, we're sensing something irregular and asymmetrical and imbalanced about Yitzchak vis-a-vis Yaakov on the back end and Avram on the front end. The truth is, before we even wander into Parshas Toldos, we sense something odd. Because names in Sefer Bereishis are pivotal. They're reflective as well as causal. They both reflect mission and they cause mission. So they reflect Avram's role, and when Avram's name is changed, it thrusts him to a new light, into a new function. He's no longer Avram from Aram Naharaim, he's Avraham, Avhamon Gaim, the international sweep. And certainly as we'll read about Yaakov, and we start to read about in this week's Parsha, Yaakov struggles to usurp and to surpass Esav, even though he wasn't born first. And that struggle is captured by his hand clutching the heel. And it's also captured by the surreptitious manner in which he has to achieve the brachos vayakveni. So there's something about Yaakov's struggle and his need to fall upon non-orthodox approaches that's captured by his name Yaakov that transitions into his triumphant name of Yisrael. You're no longer usurping, supplanting, struggling, holding onto people's heels. You're not fighting angels and triumphing. Kisarisim l'kim v'anashim v'tuchal. And Yosef has many names, and those name changes represent shifts, Safnas Panech and Afreich, and everyone's changing their names, and everyone's... Isn't it odd? There's one person who only has one name. And that's our friend Yitzchak. No shifts, no transitions, no act one, scene one, scene two. It's all Yitzchak. But you know what, poor guy. Even the one name he has isn't his. Because everyone's name in Bereishis relates to their lives, to their functions, to their mission, to their accomplishment, to the struggles, to the failures, to the hopes, to their dreams. And Yitzchak's name is what people responded to when people heard that he was going to be born. Oh, sorry, you can have a child. Tinohi, isn't that funny? They were laughing, they were astonished, they were doubting. Could you imagine if, let's say, you don't know your name. And after 18, your parents gather you in the living room and say, we've waited this long to tell you your real name, we just called you, but you know what your name is? Your real name is Bagel. We didn't want to tell you before, it was a little bit embarrassing, but you should know your real name is Bagel. Because that's when we found out that Ima was pregnant and having Bagel, so we decided to give your name Bagel. Seemed right. Your middle name is Cream Cheese, don't worry. That's my name? How people were responding when they heard the news of my birth announcement? You can't do better than that. There are books of names. Just go on the internet. John would work. Most popular name. Most popular name in Israel. Moshe Cohen or something. Just pick it out of a book. And you have to call me Yitzchak because people were laughing. So I've got one name, no drama, one parsha. And even my name isn't about me. But when we look at this one parsha that Yitzchak has, I mean, this is mine, right? This is my parsha, correct? Okay, I only got one. Avram has three. Yaakov has six. I get the concept. I can get over it. But this is my time to shine. This is my parsha. Let's roll our sleeves up and deal with Yitzchak's parsha because we only have 1 week to discuss Yitzchak. We've got a month and a half for Yaakov, 1 week for Yitzchak. That's a pretty boring parsha. There's nothing dramatic. There are no angels. I mean, that's a sign you've made it in Sefer Bereishis, the angels. Avram, the three people, Yaakov, the Sulam Mutzav Arza, the mysterious people at night, the angels in Vayishlach, the beginning, in Vayetze, and in Vayetze in the end. And that's a sign. That's a sign of prestige, that you walk with angels, that you're part of the celestial experience. You might say Merkava. Okay. It's another sign of importance. Wars, confrontations, military entanglements, Paro, five kings, four kings, Esav. Can't even buy a war. It's pretty humdrum. No wars, no angels, no drama, no confrontations, no kings, no noblemen, no stone. It's a pretty, pretty domestic, sedentary, pedestrian parsha. Okay, not everything has to be exciting, right? You can also, well, at least it's my parsha, right? He's not even in charge. Everything's happening around him. Nothing is being directed by Yitzchak. He davens next to Rivka. And when Rivka's uncertain about, she goes and consults. And then Yaakov's in the kitchen playing his master chef, and Esav walks in and they prearrange who receives the brachos, the bechora. And of course, as an iconic sign that he's not really in control and authoring events, he goes blind. And the brachos are distributed without his even knowledge. And then Rivka dispatches Yaakov because she's afraid. And Yaakov has got one single parsha. Doesn't go through any name changes. Nothing dramatic. And even his parsha is taken from him. Well, he's got very little. Well, at least Hashem speaks to him. That means something, right? Hashem speaks to you, gives you a shavua. You're a righteous person. You deserve my protection. You deserve to see the future Jewish people. So let's listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu repeating the shavua to Yitzchak and offering brachos, source number Gimel. This is Yitzchak's one shining moment. This is not about the brachos. This is Hashem speaking to Yitzchak. This is his moment to shine. Hashem tells him, V'herbesi Zaracha, source number Gimel, line 4, Kechovei Hashemayim. He just imagined Yitzchak beaming, bring his tie on. Yes, here it is, my bracha. Kechovei Hashemayim, V'nasati Zaracha, Kol Ratzot Se'al, I inherit the land of Israel. V'sbarachu V'zaracha, Kol Goyei Haaretz. Yes! Why? Ekev Asher Shema Avram Bikoli. Because your father Avram, he was a hero. He listened. He adhered. He fought. Ekev Asher Shema Avram Bikoli. What am I, chopped liver? This is my one Shavua. And then Hashem says, by the way, finally comes to him in a dream. Vayera Elav Hashem Balayla Anochi Elokei Avram Avicha. I'm Avram's father, and mine also, right? Right, Avram, and finish. Okay, Avram, you know Shemot Esrei Kodesh Baruch, right? Let's finish the bracha. Okay, Avram, okay, Yitzchak. Al tira ki yitcha anochi v'rachticha v'rbeisiz haracha. I will bless you, and I will ba'avor Avram avdi, because of Avram. Hello, what, am I here? Is there such a thing called Yitzchak? Who is this man whose identity is submerged, who has one parsha, whose name is irrelevant to his life? You're starting to get the picture. There's some phenomena that's deeper than the surface. There's something we have to excavate here. There's something about Yitzchak's life that isn't just the obvious avos thing. What is Yitzchak's narrative? But we're not finished yet. Because if we're looking for that one drama, that one chance for Yitzchak not to be deceived, manipulated, blind, circumvented, it's that one confrontation with the one king. There's a famine, so there's some stress, there's some challenge. You got to stand up and face the challenge of the famine. So let's finally see Yitzchak and finally how he faces adversity. So it's number Gimel. Vayehi ra'av ba'aretz. Milvan harav harishon Hashem. Yeah, it's not even his famine. This is the second part of Avram's famine. This is the tail end of the Avram famine. Milvan harav harishon. Imagine he's like, no, stop mentioning my father. No, it's my famine. Can't you see I'm hungry? Milvan harav harishon. I show you up in the Avram. Just give me a famine. Call it my famine. I'm not asking for any awards. Just call it the Yitzchak famine. So now he has to travel. So he says, I have a great idea. I'm going to travel to Avimelech. Real novel idea. Where did that one come from? But he's got a problem. Because maybe they'll steal his wife. So he's in the back room thinking of a really inventive solution to this problem. He comes up with his great idea. She's my sister. No one will fall for that one. I'm not going to see that one coming. Why? And a little bit later in the parsha, this is now Chavav Yudches, after this whole thing washes away, now he's got water issues. Remember, Yitzchak's a farmer. First successful Jewish farmer. Anyone know what he named his successful homestead? Me'asherim, because he scaled it 100-fold. He expected a certain amount of harvest, and he scaled it by 100 times. And Me'asherim was a sign of productivity, of expansion. The city of Me'asherim was launched, in Parshas told us, was launched in 1874. So it was one of the five, it was the fifth community to be built outside of Yerushalayim Atika. Since it was launched this week, and for other reasons, they called it Me'asherim. It was a brave, brave departure into these precincts outside of the old city of Yerushalayim. It was very dangerous to live there in those periods. So Vayeshev Yitzchak Vayachbor, he has to redig the bear. So instead of finding new locations, Vayachbor is Be'eros HaMayim Asher Chafru B'Mei Avraham Aviv. Digs the same wells, but at least here's his last chance. The same wells, same lies, same famine strategies, same famines, same promises. At least come up with a name. Right, naming embraces is iconic. Other names, all the animals, and that shows he understands them. So you name places, and Vayikra lem shemos, kashemos, asher kara lehem, aviv. Same names. Now we're getting a little bit symbolic here. Who is this man, Yitzchak? Where has he gone? Why is he discriminated against? Yitzchak lives matter. Yitzchak matters. Where is this man, Yitzchak? Why is he being given such shaft? Why? Or, as Chazal tell us, a member of the first pasuk in this week's parsha, you all know, Ve'ela told us Yitzchak ben Avraham. Avraham olidis Yitzchak. Could you imagine if on your tombstone, these are the accomplishments of Yitzchak? He was Avraham's son. It's in the first pasuk. I don't have to tell you this medrash and that approach and Eila told us, you're waiting. Eila told us, Yitzchak ben Avraham, he conquered, he shifted, he transformed, he preached, he changed, he redeemed, saved, climbed Mount Everest. Avraham holiday Yitzchak. Or as Chazal, this is just Chazal punctuating what I just read to you. Avraham holiday Yitzchak. Now listen to Chazal's way, so you'll learn how to read a medrash. Source number Vav. Avraham, Nikra Avraham. Yitzchak, Nikra Avram. Doesn't mean when you saw Yitzchak in the street, you said, hey, Avram, how are you? He was Avram. His identity was Avram. Dechsev, Eila told us Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram. You see the juxtaposition, Avram, Avram, doesn't quote the end of the pasuk. It's a chazal, read the pasuk, it's chazal's trope or method for saying. Eila told us Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram. It's called in literary device enjambment, where you take two words that don't naturally belong and you jam them together for dramatic effect. Eila told us Yitzchak ben Avram, boom, Avram. Where are we? Who is this man? What do we learn from this man? So, got to learn a little history. If you're a student of history, you get it. One of the most ambitious and electric moments in human history was the end of the 18th century. After thousands of years of servitude, feudalism, futility, suffering, backwardness, regressiveness, man began to dream. Man began to dream of brave new forms of governance, of equality, freedom being a basic inalienable right, not a province of noblemen and royalty alone, and of wealthy people. This is an electric moment. And it was the climax of several decades of intellectual ferment, of dreaming, of cultural development, of the Renaissance, of man believing in his own talent, and ability of science to decode the mysteries of his universe, the dignity of the human condition, inalienability of human rights. And two different political movements expressed all these aims, hopes, and ambitions. One was very successful. American Revolution. One was a calamity, the French Revolution. What rendered the French Revolution so calamitous? In some ways, if you were an average bystander in the streets of Paris, you would have thought that a revolution in the streets of Paris would have far greater impact on the human imagination than a couple disgusting, unshaven colonials rebelling against the British Empire far away in some distant land. Why did the French Revolution collapse? Because every revolution is only as successful as the subsequent period of entrenchment. Because revolution represents a paradigm shift, where people change the way they see themselves and their world. And when you revolutionize consciousness, there needs to be a successing or succeeding period in which those changes become entrenched, become a new paradigm, take hold in human imagination. Change doesn't happen overnight. You shift a paradigm, people have to process, digest, understand, apply. Because ideas of importance have to innervate all aspects of the human condition. What does it mean after Copernicus proves the world is round? What does it mean not just to astronomy? What does it mean to identity? I'm not going to fall off the earth and there are sea monsters. It changes everything. It doesn't just change astronomers' calculations. It's going to change your very identity. It's going to change your family life. It's going to change your view of science. It's going to change your view of seafaring, which is a major form of transportation. What does it mean that people can govern themselves? Change has to become embedded. Change has to start to expand and infiltrate all aspects of behavior and of identity. And the French Revolution is a revolution without that second period of entrenchment. It's just an endless revolution, and more energy, and more. And today's revolutionary leaders are tomorrow's victims. And Robespierre launches the revolution, and he becomes guillotined by the time the revolution. And Jean-Paul Marat ends up in a bathtub. Because revolutions have to transform into moments of stability and consolidation and coalescence. And part of the miracle, so to speak, of the American Revolution is that freedom fighters and gunmen and militants became dignitaries and politicians and governors. And in the sense that there's a shift, that there's a separate timing, there's a separate period, that is what is on display and told us. Avram's life is a seismic shift in human identity on every single level. Morality, ethics, to live an ethical life, to care about others, to be selfless, to sacrifice your own comfort and your own needs for the betterment and improvement of others. Not just based on some practical logistical aim, but because there's a God who's a moral energy. It's like Kadosh Baruch Hu's Mechalkel Chaim Bechesed. And if you want to live a life of content, then you'll live a life of morality. And you'll live a life of sensitivity and compassion, not selfishness. The world of division, teeming with diversity, comes from one, Hashem Echad. It's an impossible concept. We take it for granted. Look at the diversity in this room. Just in this small little pocket of human experience. Look at the diversity within your own self, your conscious, your subconscious, your body. How can one infinite, indivisible being be responsible? Good, evil, night, day, body, soul, physical, spiritual. How? And not only could you believe in a distant, unknowable God, but you could feel passion towards that God. As Rabbi Tursky, I wasn't at this year, but undoubtedly spoke about. The great miracle of the Akedah, that everyone agreed, okay, you've proven this invisible, unknowable God, can you love something that has no physical attraction, there's no physical reference? That's the challenge of your Avodas Hashem. Not just to robotically perform mitzvahs based in obedience. Will you live with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Will the Rabbanu Shalom be a tangible, palpable part of your lives? Will you carry him with you on a day-to-day basis? Without Chas V'Shalom, we'll have to a cross or a painting or a sculpture. It's an incredible miracle of history to be able to relate with human emotions to an unknowable, inscrutable divine being. And now it's necessary for there to be a period without any change. Day in, day out, the same. So people could grow accustomed to some of these ideas. Every revolution carries the peril of what I call the pendulum swing. I remember once walking into a high school a long, long time ago to interview students. It goes back 20 plus years, give bechinos. And a boy, a 10th grade, I'm just giving you one story. I've seen this story happen hundreds of times, but 10th grade, said, Rabbi, I want to sit in on your shiur to the seniors. And the boy was on fire. And he understood the shiur, top of the shiur. He's learning night seder around the clock. And then 11th grade, he came to the shiur. And then 12th grade, comes in with an earring, strange hairdo. Total pendulum swift shift. Danger of pendulum swift shift. The Tzar says that these wells being stuffed and clogged symbolizes the fact that many of the people that Avram had converted went back, or OTD, as we would call them, went back to a pagan lifestyle. So obviously, the world is still jello. Everything is still very, very unstable. Everything is trying to consolidate. It's not yet congealed, for good reason. So you want to look at a hero? It takes incredible inner strength to be Yitzchak. It takes incredible conviction because there's great excitement and adventure and creating and revolutionizing and introducing new ideas and change and Che Guevara. Get yourself a Che Guevara t-shirt. Go to Latin America. Topple the government. It takes a lot more inner strength not to try to reinvent the wheel, but to live a life in which you take ideas that are bold and live them consistently but undramatically on a day-to-day basis so that they can settle into the human imagination. That is exactly what you see on display. Yitzchak doesn't have to be Yitzchak. He doesn't mind being Avram Part 2. He doesn't mind following the trail. He doesn't mind receiving the promises. He doesn't mind receiving the brachos. It's perfect for him. It's gevura. He digs the same well. It's iconically. He's literally embedding, entrenching Avram's accomplishment in the earth that he lives in the names that he delivers, in the lifestyle that he leads. This quite possibly is one of the most important lessons of Sefer Bereishis. How to balance between exciting, exotic, adventurous, novel innovation and day-to-day consistency and humdrum repetition. And if you get this, you will be successful in life. If you don't, I promise you, you will squander your resources in pursuit of constant quixotic achievements. Quixotic in both senses, in the Don Quixote sense, of trying to chase castles, always looking for that new thrust, that new burst, that new pursuit. It's true in general. It's true in the periods. Think about which period we're living in now. There are periods of great innovation of Torah study. Periods in which the roof is taken off. You're studying now. We're trying to embed you in this great period, which started around the time of Hanukkah and ended around 400 CE. I can't imagine a greater supernova of Torah scholarship. Tanayim, Amorayim, people who knew Torah, unparalleled. How many hours does it take you to decode their finger snapping? They knew Gemara like you know sports. You say your sports team, you remember all the images of their victories. That's how well they knew Gemara. And we're sitting there hours and hours just to decode one line. Because they knew it so instinctively. What would it be like to meet these people? They came walking into the room. There'd be balls of fire trailing in their wake. People uncorked Torah to that degree? What would it mean to go back into Spain and meet the Ramban? Such encyclopedic, such diverse Torah interaction, Kabbalah, logic, Gemara, Torah. I mean, just walk the Sefer Torah. What would it be like to stand at the foot of the cliff of the Ramban? I can't compare it to any other experience other than standing at the cliff of a mountain. Me standing in front of the Ramban would be like a little dot on a map standing in front of tapering mountain cliffs. What would it be like? How did Rabbeinu Tam know Gemara? I mean, to be able to see Shas in the networked fashion Rabbeinu Tam saw Shas. That every Gemara in Shas is a node as part of an overall 3D network of interconnected nodes. And you can't read one node alone. You have to read multiple nodes at once. How can this Gemara say that when this Gemara says that? How do these people get there? But every period of Torah explosion is followed by a period of Torah consolidation. Because every revolution has to be embedded. And the revolution of the Tanaim and the Amoraim, and the incredible logic that they articulated, and the way that they, my goodness, the way that they decoded HaKadosh Baruch Hu's divine word and delivered it in coherent human-sized fashion is the intellectual miracle of human experience. And I promise you, any field that you'll ever study is a pale shadow compared to what Chazal were able to accomplish. And I know I've studied many of them. And don't ever forget that. Because you'll be impressed by different fields of intellectual inquiry, as you should be. But just remember the proportions. Just remember you're entering finitude, and when you look into Shas, you're staring at the enormity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's unlimited will. And then from about the year 500 to about the year 1000, the year of the Gaonim, the period of the Gaonim, nothing much happened in terms of innovation. Because the Gaonim spent much of their energy collecting all the varying texts of the Gemara, editing which line, organizing, rough translations. No one would be in this room if not for the Gaonim. But how often do we learn the Gaonim in Gemara? How many times have you heard of Rav Haigon or Rav Sajjan? I mean, in day-to-day Gemara learning. Every day you're learning their Gemara because they cobbled together all this explosion, collected, organized, edited, canonized. After this great period of the Rishonim, also in the 16th century, a great man in Svat, Yosef Cairo, says, okay, now's the time for collection, ranking, conclusion, halacha, applying halacha. Then he starts a 200-300-year period in which most people are writing on Shulchan Aruch. Even the creative svarim are being written about Shulchan Aruch. It's a paradigm shift. People stopped writing about the Gemara. Do you know the most important sefer written in the 17th century on Shas? I don't think I own it. And it's the most important sefer. I think I've opened it once in my life. It's called the Kikayon D'Yoma. One of the great svarim of the 17th century. Ooh, the Shach. Magen Avraham,
Because everyone's trying to, what are the Yosef Parah mean? What's the Pesach? And even when they go off into creative thought places, it's all about Shulchan Aruch, Shulchan Aruch. And all of a sudden, 18th century, 19th century, once again. Some of that analysis has been lost. Some of the ideas which were intuitive earlier had to be articulated. Another explosion, Reb Chaim, Reb Chanan, Reb Sameach, the Volozhin Yeshiva, all of a sudden, creative new ideas, developing a literature. It's known in the yeshiva world as Yeshiva Shered. Basically, most yeshivas in the world today, I'll just go through the collected works of the last 150 years of Shas. What did Reb Chaim say? What did Reb Chaim say? What did the Rishmul say? What did they say? I'll follow that trail. I gain for it, but I'll limit myself to that trail. I want to know all of Shas. I want to try to grapple with all of Shas. Reb Chaim didn't talk about it. It doesn't exonerate me from responsibility to grapple with it. But I want to give you the tools. So once you have the tools, you can apply those tools from Bava Kava, Daf Chaf, which there are thousands of smart ones in neither Daf Shin Dal of Men or something. No one wrote that, because it doesn't exist, of course. Guys, you know the most important two svarim to be written in the last century? Anyone tell me the most important svarim written over the last century? Kahati, Mishnayos, and Art Scroll Gemara. By far, not even close. How many thousands, hundreds, millions of people are learning Torah because of Kahati and Art School? And the related, Schottenstein, whatever, all the related. Because it's our job now. We have to reinvent the wheel. Torah has that ebb and flow, crests and troughs. We're now in a post-revolutionary era as far as Torah study. Collecting, organizing, extending. Most important sefer written in the last century are my shiur and on the internet. I'm trying to get your attention. What's my goal? Can I take this incredible world of theoretic analysis that people are amazed by and enchanted with when they enter the yeshiva? Can I capture that lightning in a bottle and share it with people who aren't in the yeshiva world, who are never in the yeshiva world? Can I find a language that will help them understand it? Can I deliver a shiur to people who are uninitiated and think that Gemara is all picayune, idiosyncratic details about Bava Kama, Bava Basra, Bava Maisa? And somehow say, no, this is Dvar Hashem. Every idea is a symbol, is a hieroglyph to some deeper logic, as you're starting to see. It's not just picayune discussions of this ox and that ox. It kills me, it breaks my heart when people don't understand it. Come on. These were codes. When Chazal wanted to speak about the dimensions and dynamics of possession, they dreamt up a case that would capture that logic, and they knew it so well that everyone's on the same page. Shai Mochs and Metalis is really Chazal's way of delineating the laws of possession and interaction. And they all knew Shai Mochs and Metalis is the entry point, because they just knew it so well. How can I do that? How can I defend the glory and the honor of Shas in the eyes of people who never miss a chance to impugn it? And to trivialize it. That's how progress is made, by this interaction, sequencing. Now the question is, what does it mean to me? I'm just a 19-year-old Shana Aleph guy from Detroit. Like, this is nice, just because we have Detroit. This is nice encyclopedic views of the panoramic flow of Torah. It would be interesting. You should have told me this last year for my 12th grade final term paper in Torah Shabbat Peh. I could have written it nicely. Because it's so true in your life. Because life always demands that synchronicity, that sequencing between periods of revolutionary growth and periods of just repeating your steps day in, day out to allow those ideas to settle and become second nature. And you have to be sensitive to the timing in your life and be able to be a Yitzhak, not only to be an Avraham. And it's so much easier at a certain level to be an Avraham, because it's appealing and exciting and adventurous and new and fresh and out with the old and in with the new, and it's novel. And I promise you, that's the road to a squandered life. That's Peter Pan. And you see people just don't get it, and they end up living lives of Peter Pan. And they're always finding new challenges. It sounds exciting. Keep growing. New challenges, new dynamics. Never be stale. There's a tipping point, and people have written about the tipping point. To be excellent in any field, you have to invest 10,000 hours in that particular pursuit. So if you want to really be successful, a magnificent, overwhelming achievement, it's day by day repeating your steps. Day by day swinging the axe, repeating the use, one after another, and then the tree falls. And if you just don't get that, then your accomplishments max out and cap out at mediocrity. Because after your investments, you then move over to the next. And you're starting to see that this year. You want to be a Talmid Chacham? Here's your chance. The ticket of entry, the price of admission is 7 months of learning Gemara. Day in, day out, boring. Thursday is like Wednesday. Wednesday is like Tuesday. The only difference is the title. Another shiur, another shiur, another shiur. It could be a different place. Not another trip. It's not another class trip. It's not another game against not another adventure. Think of how much in high school you live from adventure to adventure and everything else is just swept up in between. When's the next game? When's the next trip? When's the next B'nai Akiva? When's the next? Stop living life that way. Stop living life with the weekends. So hard when I see people on dead-end job, but at least have a long weekend, at least have vacation. Imagine HaKadosh Baruch Hu clips off 40% of your life. That's where people are in prison, in dead-end jobs. 40, 60, 70% of your life expectancy. To find meaning from the day-to-day and find meaning in boredom. Especially people who grew up in a culture so fearful of boredom that to distract humanity from facing the challenge of repetition, we've introduced the drug of entertainment. If we're just addicted on a constant 24-hour basis, we don't have to face those demons. Because there's another movie, and there's another game, and there's another highlight, and there's another... My goodness, watch SportsCenter once. The dunk isn't going to change. The goal isn't going to change. There's nothing more pathetic than watching the same ball through a hoop multiple times, unless you want a different angle, I can imagine, but just the exact same. You miss a certain aspect, you miss the pass, you miss mine, but it's an escape route. It's an escape hatch. Think about your life now. Think about right now, Chaf Av Cheshvan, 3 weeks into Cheshvan. How easy was it in Elul? Because everything was fresh. Everything was new. Everything was novel. New ideas, new people, new chugim, everything's being introduced. It's hard. Chafav Cheshvan in some ways is a lot harder than Chafav Elul. Because it's monotonous, it's routine. But Cheshvan are the days of glory. And Cheshvan are the moments that separate people of massive achievement and people who flame out. Right now, it's happening. I can see it happening. Some boys are generating that perseverance and persistence and tenacity, and that they're here every day in Minyan and they're every day in Seder, and some I can, it's just that shift, it's just so hard. So where are your dreams? This is training ground for life, not just your chance to be an Oved Hashem, because if you develop good patterns now and you're able to work, that's what parenting's about. You want to create a masterpiece, a family, children, grandchildren? It's the same thing every day. I wish that. That's my bracha to you. It's that when you're 40 years old, you have a home. It's the same thing. Day and day. It shifts a little here, a little same. If you can't handle that, and it's overwhelming psychologically and emotionally, then you're unable to brace that routine. One day you'll have a baby infant, Mirza. Do you know the best thing you could do for your babies? It sounds crazy. But I promise you, research has proven, and I have 8 children of my own, so I can actually tell you from personal experience. The best thing you can do for a baby is put that baby to sleep at the exact same time every single night within a half an hour. Because routine is absolutely crucial for the wiring to settle in. If one night is going to go to sleep at 12:30 and another night is going to go to sleep at 10 o'clock and the next night at 8:30, the wiring is all that. To a degree, you saw that. I mean, you're not babies, but you're still growing. Remember how hard Ben's mom was to a degree? It was fun, but you felt out of whack. You felt... Why do you think jet lag is so disorienting? Because you're just... there's no routine, days or night, night or days. There's no frame. Everything is all haphazard and awry. And there's nothing settling. Nothing seeps in. You just go through days and nothing's happening. Hashem creates a biorhythm for a reason. So there's biorhythm on a day-to-day basis. There's a biorhythm on a lifespan. So these are great years in your life. You're 19, 20. These are the most incredible parts of my life. Everyone is your age. New ideas, new people, new experiences. My whole life changed. I sat in this room, and I came in as one person, and I exited another person. Everything changed. Everything I wanted became better, became different. And I want you to spread your wings and expand your horizons and grow and meet. But there'll be a time in your life in which it has to not end, because it should never end. That's stagnancy and stasis. But that's the shift. Can you pull that shift off? So I talked about a minor shift from Elul to Cheshvan within an environment of change. And then there are major shifts from being 25 to being 40, or being 25 to being 35. And there could be shifts in a day. I don't know if you have the Chazir and Gemara. It's very exciting to cut open fresh ground and dig fresh virgin territory. But remember yesterday, so good. You were able to. Do you Chazir Steinmaker Vechatarim every day, or every week, excuse me? Or you're interested in Rav Yoel ben Nun's special shiur on why Parshas Pinchas relates to Bava Metzia or something? It's exciting, it's new, it's novel, but of course, it's a combination of the two. So try to internalize that message. It's very subtle. Oh boy, but it's powerful. It's really at the seam between people of astounding success and people who are just squandering, looking for, I can use the idiom, quixotic, because that's exactly the tragedy and the sad tragedy of Don Quixote, looking for. Constantly searching, constantly looking, and trying to reinvent. And it's Yitzchak's inner strength, Yitzchak's. Doesn't need the attention. Doesn't need to be the BMOC. Doesn't need to be the central character. Doesn't mind when Hashem says, because of Avram's fealty and fidelity. Doesn't mind the same names. Doesn't mind digging the same pits. Okay, in 15 minutes, let's give Esav a little love. Right, for Esav. Talk about tragic victims. Let's give Esav a little airtime. What happens? What's his fatal flaw? More importantly, how does he fall into that error? Hine anochi alech lamos. Lama zali bechora. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I don't need the Bechard, rather have some chalant. Rashi, source number bays. Esav says, before we pull the trigger on this deal, remind me again, Yaakov, what does it mean to be a Bechard? Yaakov says, you're in the Beis HaMikdash, you serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you supervise Korbanos. Of course, you have to worry that you may be Tameh, and you get Kares, and you may walk into Kodesh HaKadoshim, you get Misa, instant incineration, and you can't have to eat Truma, go to the Mikvah, and whoa, 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 whoa. Kares here, Kares there, Kares everywhere. Not for me. Give me the challenge, you take history. This is going to kill me, this religion. Amalel, source number day, second paragraph. Kamas, haros, the unction of misos, tuliyimbath. How many warnings and unction? And I mean, I'm like, musal's that. This fool's going to kill me. That's religion, death, burden, responsibility, mess up, accountability. There's a G word missing. And it's the mirror inverse of what Esav sees. It's called glory. It's called majesty. This is the chance to be a Mikdash. This is a chance to be a Kohen. This is a chance to be a Jew. Of course there are consequences, idiot! But consequences is always the flip side of gravitas and importance. So you're going to lead a quiet life of shuffling silently through this life and having no consequence, no accountability, and just being happy that your dinner is served on the table, or you step up, you carry responsibility, and you accomplish things of glory. You're all sports fans. Do you want to take the last shot or not? If you don't want to take the last shot, no one will pillory you in the next day's newspaper and pass it off to someone else, but your team won't win. Can you handle responsibility? Are you a person of ambition, but know that ambition walks hand in hand with accountability? Because that's what leadership is. In a world that tosses that phrase and abuses the phrase, maybe I'll send you on the WhatsApp a link to a share I gave a few years ago about the four traits of leadership. And then how loud you are, how many followers you are, how much attention, how much power, how much... One of the traits of leadership is you never, ever pass accountability. It seems cliche to you right now, but if you listen to me, you will be a real leader. Because there are so many opportunities to pass responsibility off, literally or just communicating that way. You say, I will handle it. Period. I will handle the issue. It's my issue. It's not my issue. I'll handle it. I'll get it done. I'll take the blame when it fails. Makes it doesn't happen. That's how you see religion. Religion is death. What is that? I don't want to move to Israel because it's so dangerous. Why do you think it's dangerous? It's just by chance, right? It's dangerous because we're staking claim to history, because we're building the land of Israel, the people of Israel, the land of Israel, and the Lord refuses to let us have that opportunity. And it's our honor to be on the firing line. It's our honor to be on the front lines of history. If you want to find some quiet suburban place to live, go ahead. I'm not going to say it. Starts with T. Teasing. Starts with M. Or do you want to live in history? So do you have the shoulders strong enough to bear the burdens of being part of this glorious return to our homeland? And framing the final chapter. It's the same Asaph syndrome. I don't want religions to kill me. Oh no. Grow a spine. No guts, no glory. Take responsibility. The one that's right there. No vision. And part of the reason he's no vision, he's just an animal to convenience. And these are very, very large issues. I don't have enough time. I just want to make sure you get the synopsis. It's because he's just so busy. Because he's an itch so dead. And he asks Asa, you have time for me today? Takes out his note 7. Not that I have one. Note 8. My schedule's pretty full. A full schedule is the homage we pay to lack of identity. We convince ourselves that we have meaningful lives because our schedules are full. It's a trick, guys. The fact that your schedule is full doesn't necessarily mean you're living a meaningful life. In many instances, it's a smokescreen that you set for yourself. Well, if I'm full, then I must be important. If I'm important, then I must have meaning. In many ways, it's inverse. I'm going to show you a grammatical phenomenon that doesn't occur anywhere in Shas. Only here in Parshas Toldos. Read the pasuk when Esav comes in. Source number 2. Vayaza Yaakov Nazid. Vayavo Esav min Asada, the back of page, top of the page. If he's exhausted, he's been running and trapping and texting and WhatsApping and Facebooking and telegraphing and putting pictures on his Instagram of the dairy court and connecting Snapchat. He's just so busy. So busy. He's exhausted. Holly Taini na mina doma doma ze. There's an aesthetic to eating, guys. When you eat, you're closer to being an animal than at any point in your life. Which means that it's precisely that moment you have to protect your dignity. Yitzelem Elokim, table manners, etiquette, respect, clean up after yourself, put the chair back, just treat the moment with dignity. And Esav has reduced a moment that's meant to be aesthetic, social, speak to people, interact with people. He's reduced it into a pit stop. Halitaini namin. Can't even refer to it as food. It's a blur of colors. Halitaini namin. I need some bread. Give me some bread. Some bread? That's what it is. A blur of colors. He's just too busy. He can't even text. He sends an emoji with some hungry guy just feeding me. Yaakov. And you say he says red emoji. Haliteni na min adam adam azeh. Oh, we get the point. We saw that you're tired, but the Torah reminds us he's very tired. He's not just physically tired. There's just no vision. He's depleted of vision because he's so busy. It's a fatal error. Can't see anything to religion but pain, suffering, accountability. So Yaakov pulls the trigger. The Yaakov, last pasuk, here's the grammatical phenomenon. The Yaakov nasan li'esav lechem unezida dashim. Ready? Fasten your seatbelts. Vayochov v'yesh v'yakom v'yelach v'yivizez ez nabachara. Nishim achas. Five straight verbs. Tell that to your English teacher, Danny. Back in Detroit. I found the pasuk with five straight verbs. Right, isn't there a school in Manchester called Grammar or something like that? Actually, the name of the school. Go back and show them. Here we go. Five straight verbs. Take that for your grammar. Sounds like it has a Shakespearean pentameter. He eats and he drinks and he stands and he runs and he sells and he... Because he's a man of action. And that action has obscured his vision. Forget Rashi for a moment. Rashi said Esav was terrified about the consequences of religion. Just read the pasuk simply. Read the pasuk simply and ask yourself, are you Esav or Yaakov? And you'll have your message for life. I'm going to die. You're going to die. What does that mean? You want to spend your life eating? Or spend your life building for people that come after you? That's the easiest way to break this down to just a small little synopsis of the difference in Esav and Yaakov. Esav says, I'm going to die. Forget Rashi, I'm going to die because of religion, because I'm a Kohen. I'm going to die. I'm on this earth. I'm going to live 100 years, 200 years. I need a Bechara. Based on Mikdash, it's thousands of years in the future, Jewish future, history. What are these? History, vision, ideology, Israel, Mashiach. I want a bag of chips. I want to watch the game. I want a sandwich. I want a nice car. That's what I'm thinking about. Ideas? Rabbi, don't give me those ideas. And I can't crunch ideas. I can't make a bracha on ideas. Give me some crunchies. Let me sit down. Let me get into Olam Hazeh a little bit. And then I'll die. Yaakov says, you just don't get it. If you don't live for something, you don't live. You just live in a prison of time. It just starts seeping away. You don't live for something beyond yourself. You want to live eternal. You want to live vertical. You want to live beyond. Connect to something. Something of value, something of meaning, of people. Here it is. He said, I'm going to die. What do I need to... New Yorkers. You think the Manhattan trade was a doozy? Purchasing Manhattan from the Indians for a few trinkets. Those New Yorkers have nothing on Yaakov. They just got Manhattan. Yaakov got Yerushalayim. For Chalot. He had to give trinkets. He gave some lentils. Talk about an unfair deal. I've come across some lopsided deals in my time. I used to pull the trick on great ones, baseball cards. I used to trade my baseball cards for better cards. I never pulled off a trade like this one. Really? Eternity, history, Judaism, Baramatem Hashem Elokechem. Look how foolish, how much folly. But in the world in which you're busy, you'd be surprised about how quickly ideas vaporize into thin air. You'd be surprised about how carnal you become. You'd be surprised about how grounded in a concrete jungle with vision blinders on you become. You'd be surprised. Or maybe you wouldn't, because maybe you're living in that world. Maybe your world makes Asaph's world look like Thoreau pondering on a riverbank. Because you have so little time and you're running so quickly and you abdicate vision for the sake of the world of Sada in action. Two lessons to walk away with tonight. Don't be afraid to be a Yitzchak. You don't need the bright lights and the awards. You don't need the revolutionary novel ideas. You need them as well. You also need stability, consistency, repetitiveness, redundancy, boredom. I say that word graphically because that word boredom sounds shrill and sounds monstrous. God forbid a yes. Boredom is the passageway to success, the ability to live a life of boredom. I'm saying that. I hope you remember. I hope you'll store it away sometime. Oh! Now you're 28, sleeper cell, you activate. That's exactly what Vitaly meant 10 years ago. There's nothing wrong with boredom. There's nothing wrong with repeating my steps. It's exactly the road to success. That's where I have to be right now. Or part of me has to be. And don't fall into the trap of Asaf. Don't be so tired intellectually and emotionally that you can't see glory and you can't commit to ideas. Okay, I'll take a quick break. Thank you. Thank you.